Welcome to the Eastman Dental Podcast, where we hope to inspire, motivate, and provide education from our guests' experience.
What an inspiring episode with Jo Dawson.
Julia, I think it was really clear to see her passion for oral health education. And it was great to see how she's actually implementing that every day.
Yeah, and such an advocate for dental health in the young.
And as she talks about, this isn't something that needs to be done at government level. She's really making a difference locally.
And letting people know that actually they can do projects in whatever dental setting they work in and really get involved.
So if that sounds interesting to you, sit back and listen to Jo's episode.
With your hosts, Josh Hudson and Julia Bruin.
So, Jo, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I have to admit, when we look through the list of different things that you've been up to, there's quite a lot of different things that you've done. But before we get into those in more detail, I think it's always good to go back to the start. And everyone has a different story of how they got into dentistry. So what's your story? How did you end up getting into the dental world to start off with?
Well, I always had a positive experience at my dental practice as a child. I never needed any treatment. I think that really helped.
Yeah.
And my mum was a childminder. And one of the families that she looked after the children for were, mum and dad were dentists. And so when my 16th birthday was approaching, they said, oh, would I like to get a Saturday job working in the practice? So I said, yeah. So that was it. So I worked for 2 years part-time on a Saturday morning, and it was amazing. I'd already been working for 3 years in the fruit and vegetable in the local market, so I was used to getting up on a Saturday and going to work. But the bonus of the dental practice was it was indoors. It was paid twice as much money. I got a staggering £2.50 an hour, whereas I only got paid £10 for the whole day on the fruit and vegetable. So it was just a whim, you know, how could I refuse? And yeah, it was a great pleasure. Then when I finished my A-levels, I went off travelling. And so I stopped my Saturday jobs. And that was it for the beginnings.
So fast forward sort of fruit and veg, you've come back from your travels. You're then perhaps trying to decide what to do with your early career in dentistry. So perhaps take us back to that time when you really firmly decided to do dental nursing and perhaps talk about the highs and the lows of that sort of career.
Yeah, so I tried out a few different jobs in between travels. Never really stuck to anything that grabbed me. But then one day I happened to be in a job centre and saw an advert for trainee dental nurse. And I thought, oh, I did really enjoy that. I'll give that another go. And so I got a job in a very busy NHS practice in Uxbridge because my boyfriend at the time, now husband, was at Brunel studying at university. And the first 2 weeks were lovely. The senior dental nurse who was training me was great. She was really, really thorough, but, you know, kind and helpful. And the dentist she was working with was pleasant. And then when I moved into my surgery and was working with my associate dentist, then it suddenly things changed and it was horrendous. It turned out that the associate dentist would scream and shout at the nurses all day long because they were so stressed in front of the patients. It was, the whole thing was awful and I just wanted to quit. But I knew a few weeks wouldn't look too good on my CV, so I thought I'd better, you know, make the most of it and hang around. Thankfully, the other nurses and the receptionist, all the, you know, the team, kind of really supported each other and bonded very strongly because of the situation. But that was definitely a low point in that the hierarchy of the system of the practice and just the way we were treated was awful. But like I said, it kind of gave us that camaraderie and the teamwork amongst the DCPs was stronger. And despite all of that, I still enjoyed the work, you know, the patients, meeting people, taking them through the journey, improving their appointment in every way we could, and that side of things. And it wasn't until quite a few years later that I discovered there was actually a qualification that I could do. and, you know, learn more about it and why we were doing things or what we should be doing more to the point. Yeah. And so I stayed in that job for a year. I thought that was fair enough on my CV. And then I moved to work to more of a mixed practice, private and NHS, which had two surgeries in different places. And that was much less shouty. And that's when I started to do my qualification. But then in that role, it was almost like night and day. What I was studying in my evening class as to what, you know, we should be doing and why, and what actually was happening at work on a daily basis. So I was making suggestions to the principal dentist as to what I was learning. And to be fair to him, I think I was the first dental nurse that was qualified in the practice. And because it was all voluntary, then there was no registration, certainly not, no qualifications, just on the job training. And so he was making some changes, but to be honest, it wasn't quite quick enough for me. So then after some time of, you know, trying, I realised I needed to move on to something bigger and more advanced. And that's when I moved into a really big practice, which had a lot more specialists working there, as well as the general dentist, and also all the patients that we saw were private. So it was another step up in many ways. The whole patient experience was more enhanced because we had more time for per patient. And so I got more job satisfaction. I knew we were doing everything that we should be doing from my qualification. And yeah, it was just a nice place to be. And then working with all the specialists, wow, what a lot of different interesting things that, you know, dental mm-hmm. nursing can offer. You know, it's not just about...
So what sort of specialists were in the practice?
So one of the partners was doing implants. We had an oral surgeon that used to come in, and also an endodontist used to come in every week. And so I got to work with all of them. Yeah, so it was
And that's
was
a
great.
Real range of different dental service provision, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great variety. And so I was very well entertained in that respect. But eventually I had to leave because we moved house and the commute just became unmanageable. It was just too far, too exhausting. I was getting ratty, basically.
It was your turn.
So we moved house. So then I moved to another practice. And again, they had specialists coming in. It was quite nice. And while working at that practice, then I started to work for Temp Dent part-time as a dental nurse tutor, teaching the MVQ evening class once a week, which was fabulous. It probably worked out at less than £1 an hour by the time I prepared all my lesson and stood up and taught it, but it was so wonderful. The students were amazing, really, really inspired me to, you know, to teach them well. And obviously with anything, anybody that's in education knows that if you learn something and then teach it, you know it so much better than when you just first learned.
And it's a privilege, I think, teaching.
Most definitely, most definitely. And some of them were really inspirational. There was one student who had dyslexia and was really struggling, but she was so determined to get through it, you know, and there was others that had, you know, issues at home and different things. And so, yeah, it was a privilege. It was a real privilege. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. They did want me to do the assessing as well, but I said no. I don't want to give up the day job. I like being chairside and, you know, having all that patient contact. And I don't really fancy driving around between practices, doing all that side of things at that time. So I just did the part-time teaching and kept up the day job, which was I loved. It was great. And then we moved house again and then again. And so every time we moved house, then I would, you know, find a practice which I like more of the bits that I like more of mm-hmm. and less of the bits that I didn't. And so it was all good. And then finally in 2008, we moved to Cambridgeshire and we've settled, I believe, thus far.
So you obviously worked in different places, different environments, NHS practice, mixed practice, all these different kind of situations. And you said there about trying to find a practice with more of the things that you liked and less of the things that you didn't like. And just out of interest, from your perspective, from a dental nurse perspective, what were those things that you were looking for that you liked in a practice? And what were those things that you maybe didn't like as much?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think that feeling that we're offering the patients the best service, getting that reward, knowing that we're doing the best we possibly can. So putting the patient first, I know that's part of the GDC, you know, priorities, but obviously not everybody, not everywhere you work feels that that is perhaps the number one priority.
Yeah.
Working with clinicians who are, you know, continually learning and developing themselves. And so you're in an environment of, you know, it's no good resting on your laurels. You might have been the best practice in 2008, but we're now in 2023, a lot's changed. Have we? Are we continuing to move forward and to keep offering our patients, you know, that gold standard? And also having a team where we feel like a team, less of a hierarchy, although there's always a hierarchy, but, you know, management and the rest, but feeling valued wherever your position is in that team, for your role in that team. Feeling that, you know, if you have views to express, that they're listened to. Can't, obviously, not everybody can, you know, everything you say can be taken on board and whatever, but, you know, just feeling like that. Having, you know, now I've got a family, you know, a bit of understanding, you know, some people, when I first moved to Cambridge, I didn't have a car, so I was on the buses. That was a nightmare. but, you know, everyone, you know, just having a little bit of understanding about everyone's situation. We all come in, you know, put our smiles on. It's a bit of a show, isn't it? You know, a lot of dentists I've worked with are kind of wannabe comedians, but you know, patients want to feel relaxed, and a joke is a good way to kind of do that sometimes, isn't it? Obviously I'm interested in having a bit of variety of work, but it depends, because some practices you're stuck with one dentist, and that can be great because you know that everything in your drawer is how you like it, and you've got enough stock, and you know where you're at, you know you've got all the lab work in order, or whatever is needed, you're all prepared in your thing. Whereas other practices, they think, oh no, we want everybody to work with everyone and move everyone around, which is good for, you know, flexibility and variety, but you might not have such a strong bond with that patient, whereby the patient comes in and you don't even need to say anything to each other, you know, you're just flowing together. So there's, you know, positives and negatives in different ways of working. But yeah, I just think a general feel of the place. Everyone has things that they like and don't like, and you know, I think if you're not finding that, then you know, ask yourself why. You know, what do you want, and then see about, you know, making it more like that.
That's really interesting. Really. I think the point you make about growing and people continuing to develop themselves, both the people that you're working with and also yourself, is a really interesting point. And that's something that you've done, and health promotion is an area that you've explored further. So what kind of got you more into that kind of health promotion mindset and exploring that area more? How did that fit into?
Well, it's very interesting. I have to be honest, Josh, that I didn't expand my knowledge as quickly as I could have done, because for years I was thinking, oh, I would quite like to do radiography. But actually, in practice, when the dentist goes off and take an OPG for somebody, that's when I've got time to do stuff. Actually, am I going to create more work for myself? Then I've got to go and do that as well. And da, da, da. I was always, whenever we had patients, children, families come in, into surgery, and then the dentist would do a checkup and they say, oh, you know, the child needs to come back for a filling. I was always slightly, you know, oh, how's it going to go? As far as the patient experience, obviously depends on the patient's age and how, you know, compliant they are. But on a number of occasions, quite a number of occasions over the years, you know, I've been a dentist for 30 years now, so I've seen a few patients, but the patient may not have enjoyed the filling experience, and the parents may be sitting, watching, feeling helpless, you know, at this point, squirming in the chair. But my thought is, you know, this could have all been prevented if only they'd known, you know, how how to reduce the risk of tooth decay, then perhaps, you know, we could have avoided this. And also now with the statistics about, you know, the number one reason for 5 to 9 year olds being admitted to hospital for a GA is tooth extraction due to tooth decay. You know, it's heartbreaking to think of all the families that are impacted by that. And it's not just the child suffering and losing a tooth and then what happens to the rest of their dentition. It's obviously, you know, the pain, the time off school, the time off work, all of the things that's associated with that, as well as, you know, I think, what did they say? It cost the NHS, I don't know, 30 million, 80 million a year, some ridiculous amount of money. Anyway, so preventing tooth decay was a bit of a passion. You know, I felt it from those firsthand experiences in surgery, but also from understanding from statistics, you know. So I've always wanted to learn a bit more about, you know, about oral health education and how my role as a dental nurse could perhaps involve that and then moving forward. So, yeah, so in 2010, I think I got my qualification. And then I was offered a job share, a Saturday. It seems that all my career moves are a Saturday job. Saturday job as oral health educator in the practice where I worked in Cambridge. So job share with another nurse who was also oral health educator, and it was marvellous. We loved it. We had our own day list, which, you know, was quite a revelation. Really exciting, really rewarding.
And quite also forward-thinking, perhaps, say, of the practice to think about having, you know, you doing that sort of role.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of the what I was talking about earlier about, you know, as a whole trying to offer the best to our patients, they saw it as an add-on, a bit above and beyond the norm, you know, something extra for the patients coming to the practice, which they could see the benefit of. So me and my colleague, we did feel really lucky to have that opportunity. If the dentist is doing a checkup or a treatment or the hygienist is seeing a patient, you've got so many things you need to do in that appointment time. And there's not necessarily that extra space for that discussion about, so how are you getting on at home? You know, what are you struggling with? You know, what's working, what's not working for you. Whereas obviously that was our basic role. So we had time to kind of delve into the, you know, the patient's daily routine and the life and particularly tailor it, you know, directly for them. And so we found out all sorts of things that the dentist may have been seeing them, you know, 6 months for years, but never kind of to nitty gritty. And so the patients really found that helpful specifically to them, and also, you know, extra rewarding for us. You know, once you've got that information, then it's easy to come up with appropriate suggestions and tools and things that they could try out. But if you kind of miss that basic information, you know, just through time of, and also the patients were feeling really relaxed with us because they knew we weren't going to do anything. Yeah. We weren't going to torture them in any way other than just they had to sit.
So you've sort of worked on these initiatives within the practice, but let's big you up for the initiatives that you've been doing. You've been working on lots of different things with that oral health promotion hat on. So perhaps tell us some about, you know, the highs and the challenges perhaps with doing things outside your practice.
Well, I suppose like the whole of my life, really. I never really planned to do it, but it just kind of came about. So like I said, I've got two children, and when my eldest started primary school, that's when I heard of SFVS, School Fruit and Veg Scheme. And they are generously supplying all the younger children, the youngest 3 years of primary school in state-funded primary schools, with free fruit and veg snacks every day of the school term. But they said that on the first day of every half term, they don't have fresh fruit or veg. They just give them dried fruit, so raisins and sultanas. Quite a big packet, I would say, 19 grams or 25 grams of dried fruit that they give out at morning playtime. So naturally, as a dental nurse, I was somewhat interested in finding out more details about this. So the school said, oh, don't worry, it's only six times a year, it's fine. And I was, as it was, you know, my youngest who was about to start school. I thought, she hasn't even met the teacher yet. I don't want to give her a black mark against her name. All right, get off your high horse, Joe. It's fine. Just calm down. And so I was just aware of it, but I thought, that's fine. You know, it's only six times a year. It's not the end of the world. You know, it's good that they're getting all the nutrition and the fresh fruit and veg on the other days. But then when actually 3 years later, when she moved up into Key Stage 2 and she stopped getting the free fruit and veg from the government, and then I had to supply her with the snacks from home, then I saw that the whole school snack policy meant that I could give her dried fruit every day of the year and or, you know, processed fruit bars, you know, the ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this, I thought, okay, maybe I can't stay quiet about this. Anyway, she's settled and they know she's lovely, so they can't blame her for my complaints. So I spoke to the head teacher and she was quite surprised to hear, actually, that all the processed fruit bars and the dried fruit was potentially cariogenic due to the high sugars and the stickiness. And she said, well, Jo, she said, now that you've told me this, she said, I'm quite happy to speak to the governors, or you can come to a meeting and speak to the governors and explain to them why you'd like us to change the school snack policy to remove these things. But she said the dried fruit is a problem. Because I'm giving it out, I feel that my hands are tied to say, I'm giving it to your child in year one, but you can't give it to your child in year three to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, that's fair enough. I can understand that point of view. She said, I'm sorry, as a school, we just cannot afford to buy the fresh veg on those 6 days. We're just so strapped, you know, finances are so tight, we just can't afford it. So I went to the allotment, had a think, thought there must be something. And that's when I just came up with the idea of asking my dental practice if they would sponsor the school to buy the veg so that they could stop giving out the raisins on those days, give the kids a snack, which was tooth friendly. We all know raw veg is the best snack.
Mm-hmm.
And they said yes. So I was delighted.
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's a really... And that came from just being on your allotment, having a think.
Yeah, I knew there must
have been...
having
an open-minded teacher, let's be honest.
Yeah, the head. Yeah, she, you know, most head teachers are caring and generally want to do the best for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their, you know, school is trying to be teaching them healthy habits and things like that, you know. So it didn't seem too far a stretch for her to say, no, this is, you know, this is in the children's best interests. Mm. I was still slightly aggrieved that there were 16,599 other schools that weren't benefiting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're still getting the raisins. So I thought, oh, what can we do?
It's a wonderful way of perhaps getting their practices involved in the wider community setting. And, you know, I'm sure there's a patient or two that comes their way as a result of doing it. And the goodwill is enormous, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that's why my practice, I've kept supporting it, because, like you said, there are there's a really feel-good factor about it. You know, the practice brand is associated as a force for good,
yeah.
You know, and it's ticking the CSR box. The corporate social responsibility is... You know, with Mark Topley, the CSR coach, you might have read his articles or seen his webinars. It's coming, whether you like it or not. Dental business has to realise that. I think one of Mark's stats is 88% of people are expecting businesses to do CSR, and they're checking up if you are or not.
I don't doubt.
Yeah,
I think they will be.
And obviously, I'm quite old. I'm about to reach a milestone birthday. But as far as Gen Z are concerned, I read 41% of them won't work for an employer or buy a product from a company that doesn't share their values. And so, so I think from a practice perspective, I think the PR is, you know, speaks for itself, really.
It's quite significant. And so this project, working on this, has kind of led you into doing other initiatives and getting involved in other things. So where did it go from here? What other things have you been involved in since?
Yeah, so, well, it's all kind of spun from that. So my MP suggested, I'd got the backing of the British Society of paediatric dentistry. Thank you, BSPD, my number one cheerleaders. And then got the backing. He said, "Oh, you need to get some more dental association support. It will look better. You know, if we, you know, want to try and make a change." And so, in lockdown, I got the backing of the BDA and the Royal Health Foundation, and then a few other dental associations. And then I thought, you know, you remember lockdown? I was on furlough for quite a number of months. I was desperate to go back to work because I was struggling through homeschooling. And so, yeah, so when I eventually was allowed to go or invited back to work, I was thinking, oh, you know, I was even, you know, I hadn't had the outlet of, you know, being a dental professional, you know, as a day job anymore. And so I was even more raring to go. So champing at the bit. So I thought, how can I take this further? So then I saw an article about Victoria Wilson and her smile revolution. And I thought, well, this sounds interesting. She's running an oral health promotion project course to kind of, you know, give you some more skills and running, you know, and I thought, oh, this could help me develop it further. And even better, there was a competition. Philips was sponsoring a free place on the course. So I thought, you've got to be in it to win it. So I applied and I did actually win the place. So I did her course and it was phenomenal. It was only a 5-week course. And I thought, 5 weeks, it's no time to waste. It's either exactly what I need or, you know, it's just, you know, a few hours a week over 5 weeks. You know, it's not a hardship if it's not quite what I think it might be. But it was amazing. It was eye-opening. It was inspirational. Week one was all about inspiration and it was incredible. So that's where I thought, perhaps we can make this raising awareness even better by adding in the oral health education element. So as well as just giving them the veg and taking away the raisins and saying this is why we're doing it and changing the whole school snack policy so the parents get involved, actually on those 6 days a year, send home some information. We know we've had COVID. My practice was shut. Every practice was shut. People are struggling to get back to doing checkups to catch up from the backlog. You know, people are less not going to be seeing a dentist as regularly or have a longer gap. You know, perhaps we can just share the dental messages out there through the school. And also, the other benefit is that we can now, you know, put the practice logo on there as well. So they get a bit of credit for all the support they've been offering, you know, all along anyway. So that was through the Smile Revolution course that I added that element into it. Then I thought, well, okay, I'm a dental professional. I know other dental professionals and how to contact other dental professionals through the dental media, meet people at dental conferences and things. But what about schools? How do I let schools know that this is happening? How do I, you know, contact teachers and head teachers and different things like that? And so I saw an article in my local council magazine about the Healthy Schools team and what they were offering. And I thought, oh, Healthy Schools, this sounds like the vehicle that could be a way in, you know, to communicate to schools. So I contacted the email on the system. And as with all these things, they put you onto somebody else who puts you onto somebody else. Eventually you get to somebody and had a really good conversation. And then through the Healthy Schools, they're working for the Cambridge County Council. So then I was talking with people in the council and I was trying to assess out who was doing what were the roles and what was happening and, you know, how could we all work together, you know, to sort of make oral health an agenda in the schools, because at that time it wasn't part of the Healthy Schools network. The local NHS community services had kind of cut back all of their services of going into schools and delivering oral health education. They were doing, or they still are doing, supervised brushing in the lowest 20% on the multiple deprivation index, but they admitted themselves actually they didn't have the budgets that they used to do for actually, you know, going into schools regularly. And so I started to work and collaborate more with different groups in the council, and I just kind of put myself out there and said, well, you know, if you've got anybody in the Healthy Schools teams that's doing a talk about snacking or nutrition or anything, you know, where you can run it past me and I can say, actually, from a dental perspective, we wouldn't recommend you saying that because actually, where's the evidence behind that? Mm-hmm. Or it's amazing what people come up with if they've just done a search for something and yeah, they're just like, well, this is utter nonsense. We can't...
connect everything up rather than just having that one opinion, yeah.
So I did input on a few different different areas. So, for example, people were doing presentations for teachers or for out of schools clubs or different things locally, then I got involved and made sure that the advice they were giving was correct and sound, and also just let it be known that, you know, oral health is related to all of these different areas. It's quite, the other thing that I found, this is going back to Victoria's form about, you know, where are you going to do your oral health promotion? Actually, it touches on everything, doesn't it?
Mm.
We are so fortunate that we're in the business of smiles yeah. and particularly healthy smiles, because we know as dental professionals, we've seen those patients that come in who really need our help because they've neglected their oral health and they're suffering for it in so many ways. And it may be that it's got to the extent that they're now embarrassed to even speak without having their hand over their mouth, or worst case scenario, they've had tooth loss and they just become a recluse. They just don't feel socially comfortable to eat in public, or, you know, let alone go for a job promotion, which involves public speaking, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But just having that confidence in their own smile, we know it's transformational, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, this is inspirational projects, isn't it? This is really making a difference to lots of people in schools. So, that's
yeah, I think it's really interesting how it started off at one point and it's grown from there, and through your determination and your interest, you've been able to grow it out. I guess you've had quite a lot of experience both within the practice in terms of having that oral health educator role, which maybe is a bit unusual. You've also done all of these things outside. So if maybe any of the team, dental nurses, whoever, who are listening, who are thinking, I'm feeling like you were feeling, I see all of this disease and I want to try and make a difference. Would you have any advice about how people can go about doing that? How can they get out there in their community and start making that difference from the bottom, like you said, not necessarily from the government level down?
It's what the whole of the dental profession has been trying to do for forever, mm-hmm. which is behaviour change.
Yeah,
and it's a really tricky thing. There's no silver bullet. There's no quick answer. And on my journey, you know, as I'm unplanned, bumbling along, seeing what comes up next, I'm thinking about behaviour change and trying to investigate what works and what doesn't work.
So I think from what you're saying, it's not necessarily one thing. And I think if people do want to make a change, it's given the information, as we've talked about, but understanding how to instigate that behavioural change and looking, reading around that and gaining skills in that area. So if somebody's thinking about, I want to be better in my oral health promotion, it's the combination of the two. That's what I'm hearing is from your experience, what you've learned is being able to give the information, but to try and understand how best to deliver that information so that it's actually going to get taken away.
Yeah. So what Tim Newton says is habit stacking is a really, really good way of doing it. So to start a new habit is difficult. So if somebody doesn't floss already, to get them to start flossing is difficult. But if you add it on to a current habit, so if they do it before or after they brush, then that's habit stacking. And so then it's more likely to develop alongside that. You need to give them a cue. So it might be that they need to leave the pack it out somewhere so they see it. It's like people say, if you want to go running, leave your running shoes by the door. And then you see them and go, oh, okay, I'll put them on and go for a run.
Mm-hmm.
With the motivational side of thing, what is the reward that they're going to get? So you can say, oh, you know, flossing's good for you. Well, lots of things are good for me, but I'm not going to spend my time doing that. What's the reward? Well, the reward is, we know, a healthy smile has benefits for general health, mental health. Obviously, it makes us more attractive.
Yeah,
it makes us feel good. We get all that, you know, happy hormones. You know, there's so many benefits of smiling, you know, that flossing, you know, will add into that. So it's kind of, from a clinical perspective, I would say, what is it, if I'm talking to a dental nurse, what is it that you're passionate about? And so my passion is, apart from allotments and the great outdoors, is, you know, improving kids' oral health. So reducing the risk of tooth decay, trying, you know, the prevention, that's kind of my passion. And so I'm trying to think about how can I spread that knowledge and make it impactful. It's all very well handing out a million leaflets if nobody does anything after, you know, it's been a waste of time, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But what is that DCP? What lights their fire? What makes them think, oh, I'm going to get out of bed in the morning and really, you know.
So if you had, I mean, you're talking about professional colleagues here, but I'm thinking if you had an opportunity of writing a message on a billboard poster in Piccadilly Circus for all of the patients to see, what sort of message might you put up for that?
No, I like a billboard. I'm very old fashioned. I do like
nothing
a billboard.
The matter with that.
And I'm assuming because, you know, I like to make assumptions, that we're talking about one where you get the glue and paste it up, and it's not a digital one that's spinning around, so you can, it's just going to be there to enjoy.
Yeah.
And you can keep walking past and see it. So I would have a big photo or a big picture of a bright blue sky, brilliant sunshine, really sunny day, and the headline would say something like, our smiles are abundant blessings to treasure and share. And then there'd be lots of like fluffy white clouds all over the place. And each of the clouds would have one of the positive things about smiles, healthy smiles and smiling. So it would be like, you know, improved mental health, you know, confidence and happiness, less depression, less anxiety, general health, you know, links to diabetes, reduced cardiovascular risk, all of those other associations. Obviously, dental health would get a mention.
Yeah.
And all, you know, all of the positive things, the rewards from flossing essentially would be floating on the clouds.
A positive approach.
Then at the bottom, it could just say something like, you know, chat to your friendly dental team for tips on how to maximise your greatest asset.
I like it.
So it's got to be positive.
Not telling people off, yeah.
There's no point.
Good.
There's no point. I'm always worried that I come across as a bit of a do-gooder lecturer. I think we all know that, you know, lecturing people, you should do this, doesn't work anyway.
It's an important
going to turn us off and probably do the opposite. So I think, you know, we need to be positive.
Yeah, for sure.
And
that's good advice.
Why not be positive? You know, there's enough misery in the world. Let's let in the sunshine.
Yeah, very true. So we've talked about lots of different things and how through your interest you've expanded those initiatives. And I think the natural question now is, what's the future hold? I know you said that you don't know and it kind of just bumbles along, but is there anything on the horizon that you're setting your sights on next?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. Like I said before, it's quite phenomenal how wide-reaching oral health kind of expands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have got a couple of things, not exactly in the pipeline, but, you know, potentially people have asked me, suggested different things, one to do with more general health, one to do with more special needs kind of oral health. And so, yeah, I haven't taken the schools thing as far as I want. This year was the first year of Awesome Smiles, September Stations, where we did lots of activities. Well, it was a resource pack for teachers, basically, so they could run the activities. Because one of the things from raising awareness is schools were contacting me saying, Jo, can you come in and talk to the kids? You know, because, like I said, the local community services didn't have funding to do that anymore. And I said, well, I can't be in all these different schools. Mm-hmm. So that's why I came up with the Awesome Smiles project, so the schools can then run their own event. So it's fast-paced, hands-on, exciting, so the kids can get excited about caring for their smiles. And so we're going to take that further. That was just in Cambridgeshire this year, but hopefully expand that next year. And also get more schools involved in the Raising Awareness project, so that, and more practices, and hopefully some corporate groups as well, you know, really, really take that further.
A lot to think about, and I think that's a great way to end. So thank you so much, Jo, for sharing your experiences and inspiring our listeners.
Well, I hope somebody's listened. No, thanks again for inviting me. It's been a real honour.
If you've been inspired by that episode, did you know that the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre provide training for the whole dental team? Follow us on social media or search for the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre to find out more.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode. We would love to hear your suggestions for future guests. Remember to follow us on social media using hashtag the Eastman Dental Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please like, share, subscribe and listen out for future episodes.